As we head toward Arizona's August primary elections, we're inviting in the candidates running in contested races to talk about why they're running and some of the key issues in their contests.
You know, it's been 24 years since Arizona has had an educator at the helm of the Department of Education.
I am a proud American Muslim woman.
That although our election system is the greatest in the world, it is still far from perfect.
We need more options for our young people, more counselors, more social workers.
Common Core has been repealed by the State Board of Ed, and now we have new standards.
And we know what's possible if we keep moving forward.
The current shortcomings of the office have left our system vulnerable to cyber attacks.
We're gonna fly, fight, and win on Election Day with your help.
Today, Steve Farley. He's running in the Democratic primary in the race for governor, and he brings with him more than a decade of experience in the state legislature, where he now serves as assistant minority leader in the Senate. But he began as an artist. Farley's perhaps best known in Tucson for his ceramic tile mural on the Broadway underpass. But he's been an integral part of Democratic leadership at the state capitol since he was first elected in 2006. Now he's going up against ASU education professor David Garcia in the Democratic primary, and he hopes Governor Doug Ducey in November. And when he announced his candidacy, he said he was running because we need somebody who's going to govern for Arizona who doesn't really have any interest at all in national office. So when he came into our studios recently, we started there. Why run now? Does he really have no ambitions for higher office?
Well, I've been serving the state legislature for the last 12 years, six in the House, six in the Senate. So I have a tremendous amount of knowledge about how things could be and how things have been. And I know there's a real possibility to actually move this state forward with really good policy. And I think when you see Doug Ducey, you see a guy who is interested in checking off a box on his resume by being governor and then running for president of the United States. And I think people right now really want somebody who cares about making life better here. And I'm not interested in going to Washington, D.C. I think there's real opportunity for change here in Arizona to be able to put people first for once.
Yeah. You had said early on, right after the governor was elected, that you were hopeful about what he was going to do, that you thought he might be somebody we could work with as Democrats, right? And that has not turned out to be the case, you don't think?
I was hopeful. In fact, a long time ago when he was first elected treasurer and I was still in the House, we were the two representatives of Arizona to be part of a program called Toll Fellowship. And we would talk with each other. We hit it off pretty well. I talked with them, and I talked about the idea of, like, working together across the aisle to actually get stuff done and how important that would be to get good policy, and he agreed at the time. I had hoped that that spirit would still be there. But after he got elected as governor, I called him up. He took the phone. I congratulated him. It was a nice conversation. And then I didn't hear from him again for months, even though I was calling. And ultimately, the next time I heard from him, he came into my office with a press gaggle and was trying to convince me why I should support his Prop 123, which I opposed strongly on the floor because it had a whole lot of problems with it.
Right. So you mentioned education. Obviously, that's going to be a big issue coming up in this election, in the primary and then also in the general election. So let's talk about that. So you were a big part of the Red for Ed debates on the floor and the vote that finally took place, and you did break with Democrats and voted for the governor's 20 by 2020 plan. Why did you make that vote?
Well, it was, remember that Doug Ducey's last and final offer before the Red for Ed walkout was $33 million in new money for the next fiscal year over and above inflation and enrollment growth. Then the teachers showed up. And you saw that amazing footage, if you weren't down there in person, of Washington Street, curb to curb from Chase Field to the Capitol, just filled with a sea of red, somewhere between 50 and 70,000 teachers there. Even Jan Brewer put on her Twitter feed, The Sleeping Giant Awakens, with a picture of that. And then she started hammering on Doug Ducey that day on Channel 12. The next day, Ducey has a press conference, and all of a sudden, he's got this new brand, 20 by 2020. Mm-hmm. Well, it didn't turn out quite to be that way, but with a lot of hard work on the part of all those tens of thousands of teachers who showed up that entire next week in the legislature during budget week, and those of us who are on the inside doing what we can to work things, we ended up with a sustainable source of new funding to be able to provide $405 million in new additional money in the upcoming year in K-12 that was built into the base and would be there into the future. That's, remember, his first offer was $33 million. This is $405 million. And it's more than I'd ever seen invested in K-12 in my 12 years there.
You felt like you couldn't turn it down?
How can you turn that down, especially because that is a huge victory for a new movement of these educators from all over the state? And you start a new movement and keep it going by giving them hope and victories. And this was a huge, hopeful victory. It's not the whole thing. We need a lot more. We've cut $1.1 billion from K-12 since 2009. We have to get more. But the only way to preserve and keep this momentum going is to elect a legislative majority and a new governor who understand the importance and power of a universal, free, high-quality public education system. And that's not the current people running this place.
How would you fund that?
Well, one of the things that I've really made one of the keynotes of my campaign is I'm the ranking member of the Senate Finance Committee. I'm on the Joint Legislative Budget Committee. I'm on the Appropriations Committee. I was the ranking member on House Ways and Means. I understand that when Doug Ducey says that we don't have enough money to fund our education system, he's just flat out wrong. We spend about $10 billion a year on everything as a state. That's our budget. We give away around $13.7 billion a year in corporate sales tax loopholes alone. Now, those are things like if you buy a 3-inch pipe at the hardware store, you pay sales tax. Mm-hmm. If you buy a 4-inch pipe, you don't. It only makes sense if you're a corporation that buys a lot of 4-inch pipe in Arizona. And funny thing is, there is one. It's a Nevada corporation you may have heard of called Southwest Gas. Every month, we pay them some of our money, and they take some of that money. They hire a lobbyist. They get themselves breaks. There are 330 other corporate sales tax loopholes just like this. And if we could just eliminate $3 billion worth of these, we could lower our sales tax rate by a full percent while increasing education spending by $2 billion a year. And I've been able to demonstrate bipartisan support on this concept through a bill that I pushed through that passed the Senate 28-2 last year. We can get that done, and it's important to have somebody in the governor's office who not only understands how to get it done, but knows what to do.
So you're running against David Garcia, who is an education guy, an education professor at ASU. He's definitely made this his issue as well, and it sounds like the two of you agree on a lot of the major points here. How do you differ?
Well, first off, I'm running against Doug Ducey. And anybody's welcome to run for the primary, but that's my focus. The ways we differ, I think, from education is more about he went up in front of a debate at the Flagstaff Education Association and said, quote, "I'm a big fan of school choice." Well, I'm not a huge fan of school choice, particularly the way Betsy DeVos has been saying it. He was on the board of a charter school for 4 years, but he does have a much friendlier voice towards privatization of public education. And I think that's a problem right now. I think we really need to reinvest in our public district schools at every level to be able to make sure that every kid has a great public education, not just the ones who have parents who are making the choice to send them to a different place. And I think our voucher system in particular has been terrible in terms of gutting our public education system.
Hmm. So then let's talk about the general election. If you were to win the Democratic primary and go on to that, you're at a disadvantage just when it comes to the numbers, right? There are more registered Republicans in the state than Democrats. But you've mentioned several times, though, working across party lines and pulling people over from the other side to vote for you. What do you think your chances would look like?
Well, I mean, that's the other way I differ from my Democratic opponent is I am the only one who has ever won an election. I've won 6 in a row. So I do know how to win, and no one's going to outwork me. That's the one thing I can guarantee. I'm going all over the state. I've done that for the last 18 months, in which I've seen people, not just Democrats, but independents and Republicans, too, who are really dissatisfied and don't like what Doug Ducey has done to our state, and they want somebody different. I speak really good Republican, so I go on conservative talk radio a lot. I have people call in and say, you know, I've never heard a Democrat speak before, but you make sense. There's a lot of energy out there from all over the place to change things. There's a tremendous opportunity to bring people together, and I think that's key. We got to heal our democracy at the same time as winning. We can't just win and have this polarization go on. This whole thing where we're looking at each other as enemies instead of fellow Americans who disagree, it's corrosive to our democracy. And we have more in common than what divides us, even though our social media may suggest otherwise or the Russians may suggest otherwise. We can overcome this. And I think people feel really clearly right now, people understand that democracy dies of neglect. And they're rising up to do what they can to change this state and this country for the better. We can make this a creative, unifying election in which we come together and do what's best for everybody. The appetite is out there, and I'm thrilled to be here in the middle of it.
All right. Steve Farley, thank you so much.
Hey, thank you for having me. This is a pleasure.